Forget internationals, it's back to being all about FPL. We pick out the best fixtures in game week 9, we do a deep dive on Brighton, and this week's pod might be a little bit quieter than usual. Shh, what's that? Silence? No laughing, no mocking. Yes, you guessed it. That means no Julian and Ron. Welcome back to a Jules-free FPL podcast. Sam, you are still here with me, right?
I'm still here. It's so weird without Jules. Why is it so quiet?
I know, we do this podcast very early in the morning, and sometimes, I've got to be honest, he's quite a good alarm clock, isn't he?
He's great.
Kind of energy and everything wakes us up a little bit, so it's been a slightly easier start to the morning. Yes, our French friend has gone on yet another holiday, and apparently he's unable to join. I'll let him explain himself.
Hi guys, I'm really sorry I can't be with you today for the show. I'm on holidays with literally the whole Lawrence family, 19 of us, in a place where there's no reception, hardly not. Even to send this, I really struggled. So I'm really sorry. I leave you in the safe and expert hands of Sam and Az. Not so much Kelly, but she's the presenter. She has to be there. I'm only joking, Kels. You are also in expert hands. Very safe hands of everybody. Enjoy the show. I'll be back next week for sure.
For the man that goes on the most podcasts in the world, you'd think he'd know not to put his phone quite so close to his mouth there. But yes, that was Jules. Thank you. I'd like to think I know what I'm doing after all this time. But as you know, Jules doesn't think so. Anyway, don't worry about that. It doesn't matter that Jules isn't here, because this week we have got Az Phillips of FPL Black Box joining us. And Az, I can certainly say that the bar is quite low, but you're less annoying and also better at FPL. So I think win-win. How are you?
Oh, I don't know about that. It's big boots to fill. And I've been a bit ill this week. So, you know, I'm going to try and bring the energy. I'll do the best I can.
I was going to say, at one point on Wednesday, it was a touch and go. Sam and I get a message off Jules saying, guys, I'm struggling for signal. And Sam replies and says, and I think Az has got a virus as well. So thank you so much for getting up at the crack of dawn to be with us.
Yellow and red flags all over the place.
I thought it was going to be just you and me, Kels, at one point.
God, that would have been really peaceful, actually, wouldn't it? Az, how's your season gone so far? We haven't heard from you for a while.
Yeah, probably because my season hasn't been going very well.
No.
Better last few weeks, a couple of green arrows, three green arrows in a row after four or five reds since the start of the season. So hopefully on the up now, but it's always difficult after an international break. So looking forward to getting back into the swing of things and talking about all that's been going on.
I'm actually just really scared because Sam and I wildcarded the week before the international break, which felt great at the time. But then you have 2 weeks to sit and stew, and you open the app and think, why did I bring that person in? Mainly for me, Tariq Lamptey, knowing he was going to be unreliable. I should have followed your tweets, Az. You were telling everyone that. I ignored you, but he was 3.9 and had no money. Tell us a little bit about your season in terms of, you talked there about the red arrows. I think it's quite interesting because a lot of managers listening to this will probably have had similar tales of woe, as in at points thinking, oh my gosh, this season is over already. But you're kind of an example of how you just kind of have to keep ploughing on, don't you? And your luck will turn. Did you wildcard?
I did, yes. I wildcarded a few weeks ago. That kind of stopped the red arrows, really, and set my team up sort of quite nicely. I mean, the problem is I've got a pretty rubbish team value. When I wildcarded, I actually wildcarded with less money than when I started the season.
Wow. I had 99.7.
Yeah, 99.7 to play with, which obviously
Sam,
isn't ideal.
Why have we got him on here again?
Well, I waited until we had three green arrows in a row, Kel, you see. So suddenly the season's improved. Okay, you can come on the pod now.
I mean, I'm on form, Kelly. I mean, you know, this is the time to have me on. It was just a really, really rough start to the season, you know, not going with Salah. I started with Richarlison. Yeah, of course.
Didn't we all?
Triple Manchester United, who just haven't delivered. Been fighting fires with, you know, started with Reece James, João Pedro, who lost his place quite early. It's been really hard to kind of get onto an even keel, really, and actually make, you know, decisions to improve points rather than just fighting fires in my team. But that's what the wild card's for, right? When you've got all these problems and issues, you play the wild card chip and then hopefully you reset everything and can kick on from there. So that's where we're at now. Season starts now.
What's turned it around for you then? Let's focus on the positives.
Yeah, I think going with the Haaland and Salah, the two premiums again, I think that's going to be key over the next few weeks because the fixtures for Salah look really nice. I can use the captaincy and then move around Haaland. I've got Son as well and Salah. So I think the captaincy is going to be really key. Getting on Spurs as well with Madison coming in. to. And it was Colwell, really, who, of all players, who I bought in on the wild card, got 12 points against Fulham.
Oh, of course.
And that's what you need, really. You just need that one player who is a bit of a differential just to give you a bit of a kickstart. So hopefully more of those to come.
Well, good. I am pleased things are looking up. Sam, how about you? You've had an international break to stew over that wild card. I know you said you weren't going to make any transfers. I'm sure you haven't. But how are you feeling about your team going into game week 9?
Yeah, I like the look of my squad. I think that it doesn't have any Arsenal. And I remember sitting here last week and saying that was the thing that I was most wary of.
Same.
After wild carding, like having taken out Saka. But Saka's taken a price drop now this week. So he's back down at 8.5, which makes affording him that little bit easier. And I think with the game against Chelsea this weekend, I'm just going to stick to the plan, which was no Arsenal for this one, and then use my 2 free transfers going into game week 10 to make sure that I've got coverage from that side of North London as well. So feeling okay about my team. Like, I think in some ways, wildcarding last week, I look at it now and think, would I really have made that many changes that were different? No. I think if I was wildcarding right now, I'd probably still end up with about the same team that I did last week anyway.
Yeah, as always, we are recording this on a Thursday morning, so that's ahead of press conferences and probably some players still returning. But injuries are always a concern and something we do have to monitor during international breaks. This is where we do miss Jules a bit, Sam, because you know that he will have watched, despite being on holiday, he will have watched every single international friendly, even the ones that didn't really matter. He would have watched them.
Do you know, when he messaged us yesterday and said he couldn't be there, I suddenly thought, oh no, that means that we haven't got somebody that's watched all the internationals. That means I spent about 45 minutes yesterday afternoon making sure that I knew what had happened in every single game that had happened.
Yeah.
Because Jules isn't here to do that. So I thought, I better stand up and do that.
Okay, let's run through some of them then and see just what we've found out over the last couple of weeks. Firstly, a big one that jumped out at me in terms of injuries is Andrew Robertson at Liverpool, as mainly, not because there's too many people invested in him, but I'm wondering what kind of opportunities that might open up for us with Tsimikas potentially.
Yeah, I think this is the big one, really. We don't know how long he's going to be out for, but we've seen pictures of him in a sling. Outside Greg's, I believe, as well, of all places. I think that is a massive one. I think that's a big opportunity, actually, because, you know, when I wildcard a few weeks ago, I was trying to find ways to maybe fit Trent on there. Couldn't really find a way. Alexander-Arnold's just a little bit too expensive, especially with Trippier around. But actually, you know, Tsimikas gives us a really interesting route. He's very attacking. He takes some set pieces when he's played. He's barely featured at all this season. And, you know, it is a bit of a worry when someone's coming in, you know, completely from the cold and having to fill quite a vital role in the team. But he's 4.4 million and I think could be a great option for us with Liverpool's fixtures. So, yeah, I really like him.
Yeah, I know lots of people, particularly on wildcard, he certainly does enable you to have maybe one of the more expensive defenders, as you said, for me. As I made a bit of a joke the other week, my wildcard ended up being 3.9 million defenders FC because I went so heavy on my front line. So I would have quite liked Tsimikas at the time because that would have been a premium defender for me, to be honest. Sam, what about you then? Come on, you've been through all of these injuries and you've been, not even injuries, you've just been through all of the internationals for us. What have you noticed?
Yeah, I mean, I think we, a bit like we were last week, we will be waiting on the press conferences, like you said, because there's a lot of doubts and a lot of players that are very popular in FPL that missed out on international duty, be it like with Robertson coming home early or ones that just didn't travel in the first place. Now, those players, the likes of, you know, Isak, the likes of Saka, Jackson, for you, Kelly, you've got Lamptey in there as well, Matoma even, they're all going to be quite important players to just keep an eye on. Obviously, from an FPL perspective, Son's been incredibly popular. He picked up a little bit of a knock to his thigh. I think he's going to be fine, particularly given that Spurs don't play until Monday evening. So he'll have been home almost a week by the time he's got to play that next fixture. So I think he'll be okay. And then when we have a little look at, obviously, the South Americans, because it's really the South Americans that we all kind of stress about, because they're the ones that arrive back later. You worry about the lack of sleep. You worry about, you know, the journey time, the fact that they've not been involved in training. Last time around, Alvarez played the full 90 after the international break. He had the game against West Ham. It was the away fixture against them. He got 2 assists in that one. And that was the week where Pep started talking about how important he was and how he couldn't see that he couldn't, you know, not play him. So he also played him for the full 90. So it suggests he's not too worried about his fatigue. He did come off a bit early in that game anyway. So hopefully that'll be okay. The one thing that we would be concerned about is that this fixture that Alvarez played on this international break kicks off significantly later again than the one that he played ahead of game week 5. So we've got another sort of 3 hours of time difference there, which is potentially problematic. Same for players like Luis Diaz, Darwin Núñez, McAllister. Those guys, again, have got the lunchtime kickoff and played really late on Wednesday. So just something to be really mindful of.
She wasn't lying, Az. She did do an international roundup, didn't she?
I did a full roundup just in case, because normally I can sit through these bits and not have to say too much. But without Mr. Laurence, I needed to be a bit more prepared.
I don't expect anything less from Sam Kelly these days.
Az, anything else that you think Sam's missed or anything else that's caught your eye in particular?
No, not at all. I just like to echo what Sam's saying, really. I think, you know, Darwin Núñez was obviously quite popular on the World Cup, particularly for those who went with a Haaland-less draft. But with Liverpool with the early kickoff and the fact he played at kind of 1 a.m. on Wednesday morning, I think it's going to be... I'd be very surprised if he started, I think, that Merseyside derby. I think he's more likely to come off the bench. Alvarez as well. I mean, that, you know, it's a 3 a.m. kickoff on Wednesday, then suddenly turning around to a lunchtime kickoff on Saturday. It's worrying for their minutes. So if you have those two, I'd make sure you've got a bench option that hopefully isn't a 3.9 defender. Sorry,
silence speaks volumes, doesn't it?
But I do think, though, that these players are likely to come on. So even if they don't start the fixture, I would expect that with the likes of Alvarez, with the likes of Darwin Núñez, they'll still get minutes in that game. So
true. Makes it tough to know what to do with them. Because if we do think they're not going to play, do you bench them? But then you're benching players with massive potential.
Kelly doesn't have that pitches. Issue.
I've got the option of playing Elliot Anderson, who'll probably get 90 minutes, or just, I think I'd probably rather risk... No offense,
take the 30 minute cameo.
Yeah, because they're probably more likely to get a return. Bukayo Saka, Az, have you got him or did you go without him on the wild card?
No, I went without him and had to endure the match against Bournemouth where he gave away two penalties. I say gave away in the nicest sense of the word. He literally gave away taking the penalties in that game. Yep. Could have had a huge haul, didn't. He's a player that if he plays, I want in my team. Mm-hmm. You know, I backed Arsenal to win the league at the start of the season, and you know, the result against City hasn't done much to change my opinion on that. And I think he's one of the best FPL assets we have. So I don't have at the moment. The Sheffield United game in game week 10 is going to test me, but I will be going without this week, no matter what happens with his injury.
I was going to say, what do you expect to happen with that hamstring injury he's got? I'm not asking you to get a crystal ball out, but yeah. Is it just a case we just don't know and we have to wait for Arteta to see what he says?
I think that it's not going to be a minor injury, I don't think, if it keeps him out of a Manchester City game and ends that run of consecutive matches that he's played. It's just the extent, whether the international break was enough for it to recover or whether he's going to need more time. Really, really hard to know. So I'll be keeping my eye on the press conferences. Hamstring injuries are horrible. That's what's kind of... done so much damage to Lamptey, who you mentioned, over the years. So really hoping it's nothing serious so we can see him back soon.
Sam, just to pick up on, you mentioned him before, Son Heung-min. I was a bit worried about the quotes that he gave on playing for Korea. He said, he's had this groin issue. Mm-hmm. He was rested in their first game against Tunisia, but then he did start against Vietnam. And he said, I discussed with the gaffer and I said, I will play the game as I cannot forgive myself if I don't play for the Korean national team in front of the Korean fans when I already returned to Korea. As a Spurs fan, I'm sure you'd have liked him to have sat out both of those games just to be sure he was fresh for the weekend. But we know he's been managing this injury for quite a while and it sounds like that's still the case.
Yeah, I was sort of hoping that he might withdraw from international duty from a selfish Spurs perspective. But I think, you know, I watched him in the part of the game that he played. He did also take a knock to the thigh, which worried me a bit. And then after the game, he was talking about how as players, you never really 100% fit and you're always playing with some sort of niggle or issue. Now, that's not ideal from a FPL perspective. You obviously want the players to come out and go, yeah, I'm fully fit and everything's fine. But with Son, that's why we're seeing him taken off early. And that's one of the frustrations for FPL managers is that we get to sort of 60, 70 minutes and we see Postecoglou remove him. Now, the benefit that you have this week is, as I mentioned before, Spurs are the Monday night fixture. He arrived home on Tuesday, so he's had nearly a full week back at Spurs getting whatever treatment that he needs, and I suspect will be fine to play on Monday evening. But it is a bit of a concern, particularly given that Spurs are the first kickoff the following game week in game week 10, play on Friday evening. So it's Monday and Friday for Spurs, which is the closest fixtures that we've had in ages with no midweek fixtures. So it is just something that I think he's managing, I think Spurs are managing, And I'm quite grateful to the South Koreans that they didn't overplay him during the international break.
Yeah, but okay, definitely one to monitor as well. But I was relieved when I saw that Spurs were the Monday night fixture, that's for sure. Mm. Not so relieved like you when I realised they were then the following Friday. But one game week at a time and all that.
Yeah, I think the one issue with Son, because mentioned Saka earlier, I'm actually looking at moving Son to Saka for game week 10, and that Sheffield United game. I mean, he hasn't played 90 minutes since game week 3, like you mentioned, Sam. Keeps getting subbed off around the kind of 70, 80 minute mm-hmm. mark. The biggest problem for me is he's missing that extra time as well. So it's not just the added time, because it's not just the 20 minutes he's losing, it's potentially 30, 35 minutes as well. And we just don't see Saka missing that time. So no. I think that's a big thing, especially as you know, Spurs are so good this season. A player who's that much money, playing an attacking team, getting subbed off early, I just think that he might be losable in a way if this kind of continues. He needs to be playing 90 minutes for me.
I mean, I think that's probably, I'm in the same planning as you. I'm planning to lose Son over losing Maddison, because I think you get the guaranteed minutes with Maddison and you've got that real attacking threat, potential for assists. Whereas with Son, he's just a little bit more problematic. And at the price point, it's so much easier to just downgrade him to Saka and then use that money. Kells, for you, it's ideal, isn't it? Because then you can use that money to upgrade the bench players that you don't really want to have.
I always knew at some point I was going to have to downgrade someone. So yeah, it probably will be Son, but maybe Alvarez or Watkins as well, because I've got a very heavy front line. Okay, let's take a look at the trends that are taking place in the transfer market this week. And perhaps one of the things that surprised me the most is the lack of wildcards active. International breaks are normally such a popular time for managers to play this chip. But as it stands at the time of recording on Thursday morning, there's only just over 152,000 active. In comparison, there were 675,746 active ahead of game week 8. Now, I know that a few more people maybe haven't opened their app during the period and maybe are going to activate it, so I'm sure that number will rise a bit. And we have all played ours, but why do you think, Az, that maybe managers aren't playing it in this break?
I don't think it's a great week to wildcard, actually. If you look at the fixtures this week and you look at the teams, you know, popular picks are playing. I mean, Spurs with Fulham at home this week. You know, Manchester City have got Brighton at home, which looks good for kind of Alvarez and Haaland. Lots of us already invested in Aston Villa. You know, Cash is very popular. Watkins, Diaby with home game against West Ham. And then you know, you look at some of the other players as well. Brighton have got a really tricky game away at Man City. But from game week 10, we might want to be getting on some of their players. Arsenal as well, with the Sheffield United in game week 10, looks really good. And then people are going to want to be selling Manchester United players on wildcard. Well, you can't really do that this week because they're playing Sheffield United away. So I think it's if I was wildcarding this week, I think you mentioned it earlier, that my team would look very similar to how it looked 2 weeks ago. Whereas if I wait until game week 10, I think it would look very different, because you can invest in the Arsenal, invest in the Brighton players too. So I think that's probably the reason, just maybe people having a bit of patience with their squads.
It's not something we see often, is it? Patience.
No, I know, what's happening?
And that is probably why it was so high the other week, because as you said, there was a lot of upside to wildcarding a couple of weeks ago with some of the fixtures. In terms of the most popular transfers in and out, Watkins, Salah and Maddison are the most popular players being brought in and being shipped out. Estupiñan, he's of course injured, Saka and Mitoma. Sam, you love a bit of transfer analysis. You laughed when I said this to you a couple of weeks ago. I seem to have made you transfer analysis expert on the pod. What stood out to you when you were taking a look at what managers were doing?
What's really interesting, actually, is how few transfers there's been. So normally on an international break, there's price rises left, right and centre. There's players coming in and out all the time. And I'd expect the numbers of transfers in and transfers out to be significantly higher in an international break than they are right now. So even with Watkins being the most transferred in, he's only had just over 220,000 transfers in. That's not a lot over the course of an international break period, because that's 2 weeks almost that we've had while people can be transferring them in. So I'm not surprised to see Watkins and Salah and Maddison up there, because as mentioned, nice fixtures, great form. These are the players that everybody wants to own. The same with like Anderson and Cash, who are sitting just below them in the most transferred in list. These are players that I am not surprised to see are popular this week. The transfers out one's really interesting, because the three players that are at the top, Estupiñan, Mitoma and Saka, they're players that potentially you actually want for game week 10. So to me, it would have been more logical to have waited to see what the two managers had to say, see what De Zerbi's got to say on Estupiñan and Matoma and when they might be back. If it's, you know, Matoma's got fatigue, so I would expect that he'll be okay for the game against Man City. And the same with waiting to see what Arteta's got to say about Saka. Like, to me, these three transfers out could be ones that you massively regret. And actually, it's the same with Mbeumo. Like, he's not been great. The form's been pretty awful for him in recent weeks. However, this week's fixture is really nice. So it's one of those where I think we might see players just have a little bit of regret with these players that they're selling. And maybe just a little bit more patience would have been good.
Ooh, a warning there from Sam Bonfield. After us saying everyone's patient, a few managers clearly aren't being patient, and it could come back to bite you. You mentioned Brighton there. We're going to look at them in a bit more detail later because, of course, Az is a big Brighton fan. But let's firstly go on some specific fixtures ahead of us this week. Only one place to start, Az: Merseyside Derby. So the last time these two sides faced off, it was 0-0, and that one kicked off at 12:30 on the Saturday. Otherwise, Liverpool have always scored at least two goals, and they've kept clean sheets in three of the last four matches in the league games between these sides. Now, as we've already said on this podcast, and you've in fact already said it on this episode, that Salah is someone that we all need to have, and he's been doing well for you as well. And this fixture is one that I feel like if you haven't got him for, you've probably got a lot of fear.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think, you know, the captaincy is really tricky this week because, you know, there's Haaland with Brighton at home, there's Son with Fulham or Madison for that game, and then there's Liverpool with the Merseyside derby. So any of those fixtures, I think, could lead to big points for the kind of the key men in it. I mean, the one thing about Everton is they are finally coming off the back of a fairly decent result, you know, 3-0 win against Bournemouth in their last game ends a really, really poor run where they only had one win. A surprise away win at Brentford when they'd lost kind of four of their last five games going into that. So they're a funny team. They obviously can step up when maybe when we're not expecting them to. But I think this is a really big ask for them. The only thing that puts me off Liverpool a little bit is the fact of this 12:30 kickoff. And as Sam's mentioned, there's players like McAllister, there's players like Nunes who are coming back on these kind of long flights. So what team is Klopp going to put out? Is he maybe going to make a bit of a statement and say, look, if you're going to keep putting us at this 12:30 match, you know, maybe I won't play my full strength team. But whatever team they put out, I'm expecting the ball to win by a few goals. I think Everton could nick a goal in this one, though. I think, you know, Simacast owners might have to wait to be rewarded. But Salah, definitely, I wouldn't want to not have him this week.
Sam, if managers were looking to invest in Liverpool this week, who would you suggest? Just going back to Salah, three goals and an assist in the last three against Everton.
I think that Salah is, I'm going to say, I think that Salah is pretty much essential from this week onwards. And I think, you know, when you look at the fixtures that Liverpool have over the coming weeks, if you don't have Salah, you're going to regularly spend time sitting behind the sofa. So their fixtures coming up, obviously it's Everton next, then it's Nottingham Forest, Luton, Brentford. There's the game against Man City in there, but then Fulham, Sheffield United, Palace. Like, these are fixtures that you could captain Salah in arguably every week, with the exception of maybe that Manchester City game. I just think that when you come to look at Liverpool, Salah feels like a must have again. So you get him. The question then is, do you go more than Salah? If you are going more than Salah, who are you going more than Salah with? Now, Simacast looks like he might be a good option. We're going to have to see what Klopp's got to say about how long Robertson's injury is for, because the reality is that you don't want to put yourself in a position where you've got a non-playing 4.4 million defender longer term, because there are plenty of options in that kind of 4 to 5 bracket who are playing every week. So if Robertson's going to be out for 3 or 4 weeks, then I think you can invest in Simacast, knowing you've got some attacking threat that he carries as well as some clean sheet potential. But I do agree with Az. I don't see there being a clean sheet this weekend against Everton. I think that Everton, they've got plenty of goal scorers. They've got Dominic Calvert-Lewin back, who's been performing well actually since his return. They're starting to maybe find some rhythm, although we did say this before, like I said, with that game against Brentford in the League Cup, which came back to back two good victories, and then they immediately went and lost the game week after, and we went, okay, maybe it's not quite so good. But I think for me, it would be Salah and then maybe look at Simacast. The others feel like a huge minefield coming back off the international break, and maybe it's Darwin. But it's for game week 10 onwards, when you know that he's more likely to get the start.
Do you think Salah's more important than Haaland, Sam? I mean, Haaland is the sixth most sold player this week so far. So people are obviously looking to make that shift, free up some money and get Salah in. I'm happy to have both, but which one would you pick if you could only have one?
If I could only have one, I'd have Salah over Haaland because I think the fixtures are nice, the form is better. Liverpool are grinding out results and Man City have struggled the last couple of weeks. So I don't expect that to continue. I think Man City and Haaland will find their rhythm again, probably this weekend against Brighton, sorry, Az. But if I could only have one right now, it would be Salah. For me, though, you just find the money to have both. And if that means, like Kelly, you've got a couple of really cheap budget enablers in your defence, then you have a really couple of cheap budget enablers in your defence.
For this fixture, Az, what about Everton? I know we're not especially invested, or some managers might be, but I know us three in particular aren't. If managers have got the likes of Pickford and players like that, do you think it's time to move them on? Is this an opportunity to do that?
This is the time. I think if you've got Pickford's, you know, you can end your relationship with him on good terms. You just got a nice big
haul. He's a nice lad.
He is a lovely lad. Nice big haul against Bournemouth. You kept the faith. No one thought he was going to return and he came through. Now's the time just to say your goodbyes and go for another goalkeeper. Pickford's the only Everton player that I'd even consider. And with the fixtures the way they are and the form they've shown, I don't think there's a place for him. So yeah, it's a sell. Sell the Everton assets for me.
I don't hate Calvert-Lewin though. That's the one player that I kind of look at.
Even for this week, Sam?
Even for this week, because I think Liverpool, they've only kept one clean sheet this season and it was a very surprise clean sheet against Aston Villa, who regularly is scoring goals all the time. So defensively, Liverpool looking quite a lot at sea right now. And if Robertson's not there, obviously they'll be learning to play them with Tsimikas in that position. And he hasn't been regularly starting over the past couple of years. So it's going to be a bit of a changeable Liverpool defence. And I do think that Everton will think that they could at least score a goal in that game. And Calvert-Lewin looks like the one that I would trust to kind of get that. So if you've somehow ended up with Calvert-Lewin in your team, and I think he's the most popular Everton asset to be owned, and he's still only owned by 1.4% of the game. But if you are in that 1.4% bracket, I'd play him this week because I think that there's a good chance that Liverpool concede. I think Liverpool win the game, but I think there's a good chance they concede.
Okay, those Everton fixtures that we've been mentioning then, Liverpool this weekend, as we said, then it's West Ham, Brighton, Crystal Palace, Manchester United, Forest, Newcastle, Chelsea, Burnley and Spurs. Yeah, they do look pretty tough. On to another fixture ahead of us in game week 9, then Newcastle against Crystal Palace. And this, when you look at it, Sam, is just a fixture where we're invested in both defences, really. So it's quite hard to know which way to go. Do you think it's going to be low scoring to suit us in FPL, or is Newcastle at home? We know how good they've been. Are Newcastle going to win this one? What do we do with our defenders?
Yeah, it's a bit of a challenge, this one, I think, because a lot of people have got Anderson or they've got Gahey, or they're invested in some way in the Crystal Palace defence. And I think that defence has been rock solid. They've not scored many goals going forward because they're without Eze at the moment. They just haven't had that real attacking spark yet so far this season. So I have no qualms about playing my Newcastle defenders because I'm not convinced that Crystal Palace go up to Newcastle and score a goal. So if you've got a Shaw, a Burn, a Trippier, maybe even a Botman, we have to see what Eddie Howe's got to say about Botman and his ability to play in this one. But if you've got one of those Newcastle defenders, I think you play them. When it comes to your Crystal Palace defenders, it's difficult. I think Anderson has got real attacking threat, and we've seen that over recent weeks. So maybe you want to play him because of that attacking potential that he has. And of course, as usual, after this one, Newcastle going into another difficult Champions League fixture in midweek following this fixture against Crystal Palace at the weekend. So maybe they don't take risks with some of their attacking players, like Isak missing out on international duty. We know that Wilson's always seems to be carrying something, bless him, doesn't he? So let's just see. I don't think this is going to be a particularly high-scoring game, though. Now, I've said it, Newcastle will probably go on a riot, but Crystal Palace is solid defensively, and I think it will be maybe a 1-0 affair. So I think, play your Newcastle assets. If you've got Anderson, play him in case there's some attacking threat, but I'll be leaving Gahey on my bench this weekend.
Do you agree, Az?
This has got all the hallmarks of a 1-0 Newcastle and a Trippier max bonus. I think they've scored one goal over the last three games, Crystal Palace. And that was from a set piece against Manchester United. They've conceded zero goals over the last three games. So, you know, defensively, they're brilliant. I think they've kept the most clean sheets in the league so far this season. Newcastle are a great team, but are having players, you know, coming back from international duties. I'm completely with Sam. I don't think this is going to be a 3-4-5-0 route. So I wouldn't be investing heavily in the attackers, but I've only got Botman and he's a doubt. And I just think this is about as safe a clean sheet as it can be on paper. It doesn't always work out like that. But I would definitely want to have one Newcastle defender for this game.
So will you play him and just hope he's fit enough?
Yeah, hopefully we hear from Howe about whether he's fit or not. I'm hoping that he is, because I think he was kind of close a few weeks ago. So I'm hoping for some good news, but it'll be a transfer out, I think, if he's not fit for this one, because I'm going to have to move to a Newcastle defender who is fit. And if you've got Lascelles at 3.9, if he's one of the 3.9 enablers.
He's actually not for me.
Is he not? Oh, okay. If you do have him, you're hoping for one more week, I think.
Okay. Just to run over their fixtures, because Newcastle have got really good fixtures after, and the Palace ones aren't too bad either. So Newcastle's are Crystal Palace, Wolves, then Arsenal, Bournemouth, Chelsea, then Manchester United, Everton, then Tottenham, Fulham and Luton. So there is some quite nice ones in there. But as Jules said to us last week, it kind of depends how you split up those fixtures and how far ahead you're looking. Crystal Palace have Newcastle, then they have Tottenham, then it's Burnley, Everton and Luton. So there's a nice three run of fixtures there. Then West Ham, Bournemouth, Liverpool, Manchester City and Brighton. So it does tail off as we approach Christmas. Okay, on to Chelsea versus Arsenal. If you have sold your Arsenal assets like myself and Sam has, it kind of feels like you can probably wait. I know Chelsea haven't been in the best form, but I looked at this fixture when I was wildcarding and thought, I think I'll be okay to miss out on them for a trip to Stamford Bridge.
Yeah, I mean, there's signs of a resurgence, I think, at Chelsea. It's a big win in the end against Burnley after a bit of an early scare. A 2-0, comfortable 2-0 win against Fulham. Only 1-0 loss to Aston Villa, but they had chances in that match as well. And then they drew 0-0 with Bournemouth. So the attack is starting to click a little bit more when they've been struggling. But the defence has been solid kind of throughout the season. So again, I'm not expecting this to be a really high scoring match. You know, anything can happen when these kind of teams play. But I would imagine that maybe a 1-0 Arsenal, and they'd be happy with that. And, you know, Chelsea probably wouldn't be really disappointed with that result, which says a lot about where the teams are kind of at the moment. But again, I wouldn't be rushing to bring in Arsenal players this week. I think we can wait one more week. Although I do have my eye on Gabriel, who's 4.7, going into the fixtures that Arsenal have. I just think he's such a good price. You know, got the goal threat as well, back in the team after losing it kind of at the start of the season. And like I say, I would back Arsenal to get a clean sheet in this game, despite Chelsea being at home. So it's only really the Arsenal defenders that I'd be considering bringing in. I think the rest can wait.
What about you, Sam? Anyone that you think could return in this fixture that you're potentially looking at? Don't say Raheem Sterling.
No, I'll leave that one for Jules. I think for me, Martinelli's the one that I'll be watching in this one, because if Saka is not available, then I'll still be wanting to invest in Arsenal going through the next, well, basically from now until Christmas. So I'm looking for a route into the Arsenal midfield. I totally agree with Az. I think I'll be going for Gabriel rather than Saliba, just in terms of the money and how much it's going to cost, and it frees up enough budget that I can have these other players that I've been talking about wanting. So Gabriel makes loads of sense. Martinelli is back on my radar. Last season, he was outstanding for me and I loved owning him. And in the early part of the season, I remember thinking, I really regret the fact that I've not doubled up on the Arsenal attack with Martinelli and Saka. So if Martinelli has a good performance against Chelsea, there'll be a real decision for me to make as to which way I invest in that Arsenal midfield.
Okay, let's move on to a bit more forward planning. And as I said before, as you are a Brighton fan, and they've got a difficult fixture this week against Manchester City. However, we have seen them perform against the likes of Manchester United and Newcastle, and they got a draw against Liverpool this season. I hold my hands up, and I'm a little bit embarrassed to do this. I don't have any Brighton players on my wild card. A lot of that was to do with the Stupinian injury.
You
trust
have Lamptey,
me.
No?
Oh, yeah. This says it all, really, that I forgot about Lamptey. Okay, I've got Lamptey, yes, but Lamptey probably is going to be on my bench. I would love to play him, but as we've said, with his injuries, it's just really tough to. Okay, so I've got one Brighton player, but I haven't got a Brighton starter. Mm. I wish I did. How are you feeling about Brighton, if you can kind of take yourself out of being a Brighton fan and just look at it from an FPL point of view for a moment?
Well, if you're disappointed not to have to only have one Brighton player, I haven't got any in my team.
Oh, wow, okay. And
I'm the Brighton fan, so I feel even more disappointed. We've just been such a funny team this season. You know, we've had really good results. 3-1 against Newcastle was brilliant. The match against Manchester United, like you mentioned. But then we've had the West Ham game, where we were terrible. The first half of the Bournemouth match, where we were completely outplayed. The thrashing by Aston Villa as well. So we're a bit all over the place in the league. We're a bit all over the place in Europe too. I mean, defensively, it's not a single clean sheet for us in the league at the moment. So if you're looking at Estupiñán when he's fit, or you're kind of relying on attacking returns, which is always a little bit risky. So I think probably the attack is more the place to kind of focus. But it's just, I find it really, really hard to recommend players because of the rotation that goes on. And the fact that we have got off to quite a slow start in Europe means that we're going to be really having to play our strongest team to make sure we get out of the group, which I'm a little bit worried about that even happening, which would be good news for FPL reasons. I mean, looking at the players, Mitoma's obviously the most kind of popular player at 6.6. He's got a little bit of an injury, but we think he's going to be fine. But we have seen him benched. We saw him benched against Bournemouth. We've got Fati now, who can play on the left too. Up front, we've got options with Ferguson, with Welbeck, with João Pedro, who's been one of our best players in the last few weeks. I don't know which one starts. I don't know which one is the one to recommend. If you fancy a punt, I like Adingra at 5 million. I think he's got that right wing spot nailed down now over March. So I think it's, if I was going to recommend, it would probably be either Adingra or Mitoma, but really tough.
Mitoma's an interesting one because I love watching him play. He's one of my favourite players in the Premier League to watch when he's on his day, and it scares me not owning him, but I had to sell him to kind of make way for other players. He is the third most transferred out, and that feels quite risky, really, because we know he can return on his day.
Yeah, it does. I can see the logic to buying him, to holding him, or to selling him. I don't think there's an obvious kind of right answer. The fixture run from game week 10 is brilliant, though. I mean, Fulham at home, Everton away, Sheffield United at home. Those three fixtures look great. And we saw at the start of the season, Brighton had good fixtures and Mitoma did really well across those. So I don't think he's a kind of a must sell this week, but I wouldn't be buying him ahead of Man City. Although I do think we score in that match. I just think with so many midfield options around, I wouldn't put him in a kind of essential bracket. He's risky. He's more risky of not starting than he ever has been, I think, at the moment.
Yeah, risk is a word I associate with having Brighton assets at the moment, Sam. And that was why I say that and I've got Tariq Lamptey, who's probably the biggest risk of them all. But as discussed, he's probably really going to stay on my bench. What was your reasoning for going without Brighton? Is it everything that Az has said there? And are you concerned that you don't have them?
I'm not too concerned ahead of the game against Man City because I don't think that Brighton will get much out of that game. You know, there might be an attacking return for somebody, but it's, as I said, it's very difficult to predict who that attacking return might come from. When you look at the underlying stats for Brighton, they're so mixed. So Ferguson is top for attempts on goal this season, just ahead of João Pedro. Ferguson's got 16, João Pedro and March have got 14 each. So though they're kind of leading the way there. But then when you look at chances created, it's Gross and Mitoma and Estupiñán that are at the top of the pile there. So depending upon what metric you're looking at, there isn't one player that's standing out. Maybe you could argue that it's actually João Pedro that has the best underlying numbers. So for expected assists, it's Mitoma who's top, but then expected goals and expected goal involvement, it's João Pedro. But then you have that massive risk that we all saw, because we all went with him at the start of the season, that he might not get the start. And that's then frustration when you're trying to manage budget, because if you're going to have 5.3 million invested in somebody like a João Pedro, you do want them to start, really. Otherwise, you might as well go for a Cameron Archer, who's significantly cheaper and, you know, can just come off your bench and is going to play 90 minutes every week. So Brighton are difficult. I don't have any simply because of the Estupiñán injury. Had Estupiñán been fit, I would have benched him for the last couple of weeks and just held him through this period so that I had him ahead of the next fixtures. We don't yet know when he's going to be back. That's difficult. We're going to have to wait for De Zerbi to speak, but I will invest in a Brighton player next week. But to be honest, I'll probably prioritise Arsenal over Brighton just because of the form and the consistency that we're seeing from the Gunners is so much better than what we're seeing from Brighton right now, which is what makes it difficult, I think, because next week the fixture swings for so many clubs mean that you're probably going to want to invest in multiple. And without taking a load of hits, it's going to be hard to invest in everybody. So Gabriel and an Arsenal midfielder are going to be my priorities. And then it will be a Brighton player probably for a -4 and deciding whether I want to do that for the Fulham game or wait and do it the week after.
Lots of decisions to be made. It does feel like once game week 10 comes upon us, we will be trying to get in some of Roberto De Zerbi's side. Okay, time for differential of the week, the thing that we do every single week on this podcast. And despite Jules not doing very well in game week 8, he picked Hoyland, who got only 2 points. He doesn't want to miss out, and he has texted us and said Pedro Neto of Wolves is his choice this weekend. They travel to Bournemouth, he said, because Neto's been in great form and Bournemouth, of course, still yet to win this season. As I know you haven't been on this season, we basically pick out a differential, and Sam and Jules have got a very good record so far. Sam last week picked out Tarkowski, who got 7 points via a clean sheet and a bonus point. So no pressure. She's kind of nodding her head around in a little weird celebratory dance. I'm going to let you go first, Az.
Okay, well, mine is 1.6% owned, and I think arguably has the best fixture this week in Luton at home. Luton, when they're playing at home, I think we've learned from the Spurs game, are actually quite a tough nut to crack. The pitch makes it very difficult for teams to get space. They defend really well. But when Luton go away from home, I think the kind of quality of the rest of Premier League is going to show. So I've gone for a Nottingham Forest player. I've gone for Morgan Gibbs-White. It's not been
the greatest start. You've spent too much time with Mark.
Yeah, I think it's rubbing off on me. Rubbing off on me for sure. I mean, there was some doubts over Gibbs-White because he was benched in the Brentford game. Came on for 29 minutes. But regained his place for Crystal Palace the week after. He's got 2 assists this season. They both came in the Manchester United game in game week 3. No other attacking returns for him, which is quite surprising given how well he did last season. 5 goals and 12 assists. But I think this is, you know, if ever there's a game that's going to kind of kickstart things, I think it's this one. So I actually like Forest going forward. I think they've done well this season. They look a better team than they were last year. The only problem is I think this is a proper 1 week punt, because it's Liverpool away in game week 10, then Villa, then West Ham, then Brighton. Again, it's not a great run of fixtures, but purely for 1 week, I think Gibbs-White could do well.
Okay, I like it. Sam?
I also like the fact that there will be a lot of players that are wildcarding next week, so you could go for a 1 week punt this week, and therefore Gibbs-White is a really nice pick. I'm going for a Brentford player, but not maybe the one that you would expect, and it's Matthias Jensen. He's going to cost you 5.4 million. He's only owned by 2.5% of the game, so a little bit more heavily owned than Az is, but he's scored 3 goals and got 2 assists so far this season, getting 46 FPL points, which is the same as Martin Ødegaard has got for Arsenal. And when you consider his route to points, they look really good. He's supplied 15 key passes so far this season. That's going to put him in a position where the assists are always likely to come. He's coming up against Burnley this weekend. They've conceded 20 goals so far in their 8 matches. So I can see that there's real potential there for some attacking returns for Brentford. And I think he's their informed player right now.
Okay, I like both of those. So we'll see how they get on next week. And of course, Jules's is Pedro Neto. He didn't give me a very compelling argument. They were the two lines he gave me. He's in good form. They're playing Bournemouth, who haven't won.
Sometimes that's all you need.
I mean, that
simplify.
Is true.
Keep it simple.
Yeah, but it's true.
To be fair, if he was that committed to the Portuguese man, he should have sent us a voice note in that as well. But anyway, yes, they are our differentials. Do let us know if you have any luck with any of those. On to captaincy then. And it's been 2 blanks in a row for Erling Haaland in both game weeks 7 and game week 8. The two highest captain players were Haaland and Son in game week 8, and they both blanked. Captaincy has been a real problem for me lately, Az. Not sure about you. I just seem to go the wrong way each time. But it does feel like each week, the case to not captain Haaland, or not to just automatically captain him without looking elsewhere, is becoming less and less compelling.
It is. I mean, I can't remember the last time I had a decent captain return. It's a distant memory.
Same.
These days. But no, I completely agree. And you know, I think this week, like I mentioned earlier, is a really interesting week to maybe go against him again. And I have seen teams, you know, selling Haaland, and we're seeing him in the top transfers out. So clearly people are getting frustrated with him. I just think this, if I didn't have Haaland this week, I would be worried. Mm. We struggle, I say we as a Brighton fan, we struggle against these kind of big forwards up top. Nunes, I thought, played really well against us and was unlucky to only come away from that game with an assist. We've seen Watkins destroy us already. We've seen Calvert-Lewin in the past. And we've seen Haaland, you know, score against us as well and bully Dunk in the centre. And we just can't keep it tight at the back. We're making mistakes individually. We're getting pressed high. And Manchester City are going to really kind of think they can capitalise on that. So I hate to captain a player against my own team, but I do think, although there's three good options in Son, Salah and Haaland, I still think Haaland is the best pick this week, so I'll be captaining him.
Wonderful. After me giving it big, Sammy should go away from Haaland, as is going for Haaland. But no, I completely agree. Do you agree, Sam?
Yeah, I think Salah's a really nice pick, but it's the lunchtime kickoff, so as we know, I won't go there. I am very, very tempted to captain Madison on Monday evening. I really like that fixture for Spurs. I love the idea of having somebody captained in the final game of the game week. There's something absolutely magical about going through the whole game week.
I find that so scary because then you're kind of like relying on him.
No, I love that. I love that in the way that I hate it in the 12:30 because it's done and you kind of have to deal with it whichever way it's gone. I love the fact that you get to Monday and you're like, my game week could still be amazing. So
it never is.
No.
I think that's why I don't like it, because it never is.
Yeah, maybe. But I do think with Spurs playing the way that they are at the moment, there's a good chance that Madison gets some good attacking returns in that one. At the moment, though, my bus team captain is on Haaland for the first time in a little while. I think it feels like a sensible week because, much like I did when I was captain and Salah last week, I was kind of like, the Brighton defence is weak, they look vulnerable, I'm worried about who's going to deal with Salah. The exact same applies this week with Haaland. I'm worried about who's going to deal with Haaland. I'm worried about the vulnerability of the Brighton defence. Doesn't mean I don't think Brighton can score, by the way, in that game against Manchester City. I think they probably will, but I just can't see Haaland blanking. And so I think, as much as I'd love to go for the late night Monday night captain, I'll probably hand the armband back to Haaland this week.
Okay, so just to confirm, transfers, neither of you making any transfers this week. Sam, you're not. As no?
I've got two free transfers.
Oh,
I've got to use one
of
them.
You've got to do one.
Yeah. I mean, it depends on the Botman news. Like I mentioned, I think that would just be quite an easy. I've got a bit of money in the bank. So if Botman's out again, I think Botman to share would probably be the move that I'd make.
Can't afford Trippier.
Oh no, I'm miles off. There's no way I can.
That much money in the bank.
The Trippier ship has sailed. I think I'm just going to have to resign myself to not getting him. And I think it's tough to have Trippier when you've got Son, when you've got Salah, when you've got Haaland. So he's someone I'm going to just fear every week.
Yeah,
I think if Botman's fit, then like I said, I think I might bring in Gabriel and just bench him this week. Although if he comes on, like I said, I think Arsenal will be hopeful they can keep Chelsea out. So that's one for the future. Good price. Okay. Sheffield United to come. But yeah, two transfers and not really knowing what to do with them is a bit of a rare thing. But I guess that's good after playing the wild card.
Okay, that's where we'll leave it. As Sam, thank you as always. Jules, thanks for, well, nothing. A reminder, the code for the FPL Pod Mini League is IB3WLK. The Fantasy Show will also be back on Friday. It'll be Gianni joining me in the studio. And your deadline is Saturday morning, UK time, 11 a.m. ahead of the 12:30 Merseyside Derby. Thanks for listening, guys. We'll see you next week.